It's Monday, July 27th, 2026, and this is Pip Install, your daily download on power, security and the machines. For the first time in nearly 2 weeks, the guns went quiet. This weekend, the United States did not strike Iran. Two nights running, no bombs, and the administration says the pause might let talks finally start. But hold your relief, because the reason may not be peace. It may be that America is running low on missiles. And here is the strangest thing that happened while the real war paused. The president kept fighting it, in pictures. AI-generated images of strikes that never happened. Then, the press dinner returns after a massacre, and an American comes home from space with two Russians. Let's install today's update. Start with the silence, because after 13 nights, it's the loudest thing that's happened. Freya.
Right. So for two straight nights now, the US military has announced no new strikes on Iran. That's the first pause in the bombing in about 2 weeks, after 13 consecutive nights, and something like 120 American attacks since early July. The president personally ordered Friday night's planned strike held, and the official line is hopeful. The administration is signalling the pause will, quote, allow talks to progress. And the president himself has floated a possible diplomatic solution. So on the surface, an off-ramp at last. But you have to read the fine print, and the fine print is not peace. The Strait of Hormuz is still effectively closed. The naval blockade of Iran's ports is still on. And on the Iranian side, a senior commander, General Assadi, said this weekend, and I'm quoting, "Our war with the enemy is a war of attrition. One that will not end." That is not a country preparing to sign. That's a country telling you the quiet is a breath, not a finish.
Here's the president's own read on it Friday.
They want to make a deal. I just don't think they're ready yet, but they do want to make a deal.
Stack. And the reason for the pause may be the least reassuring part of all.
It may be, and you can read it straight off the president's own denial. Over the weekend, reports surfaced that the United States is running low on munitions, that 13 nights of bombing has drawn down American missile stockpiles faster than they can be replaced. And the president rushed to deny it, telling the Wall Street Journal, quote, "We have far more munitions than anyone in the world, and far more than we need." Now, when a wartime leader volunteers, unprompted, that he is absolutely not running out of ammunition, that is very often the tell that the question is real. And it reframes this entire pause. If the guns went quiet because a deal is near, that's diplomacy. If they went quiet because the magazine is near empty, that's something else. That's the moment a great power discovers that even it can bomb a country for only so many nights before the shelves go bare. One of those is an off-ramp. The other is a reload. And from the outside, today, they look identical.
Freya, so what actually ends this? Because 13 nights of bombing plainly didn't.
No, it didn't. And a general just swore it never will. So the analysts watching this closest keep pointing at the one lever that might actually move Tehran. And it isn't in Washington, it's in Beijing. Here's the mechanic, and it's beautifully cynical. China is, by a mile, the biggest buyer of Iranian oil. Earlier this year, smelling exactly this war coming, Beijing stockpiled Iranian crude, bought it up and stored it. And those inventories are now running low, which hands China a very concrete, entirely self-interested reason to want Iranian oil flowing normally again. It needs the barrels. So the country with real existential leverage over Iran is also the country that now needs this over. Watch Beijing, not just the White House, because the off-ramp from an American war may end up getting built in China for reasons that have nothing to do with peace and everything to do with a tank running low. That's how these things usually end, if they end. Not because a bomb changed a mind, because a customer needed his supplier back open for business.
Bash, the ledger. Well, it's quiet enough to read it.
Use the pause for what a pause is for. Counting. In 19 days, the United States hit Iran more than 120 times. Iran's health ministry puts its dead, many of them civilians, past 50, with hundreds wounded. Hold Tehran's number loosely, but not at zero. On the American side, the coffins we watch come home to Dover, and there are 100 service members wounded. Two straight strangled, oil over $100, a region's shipping rerouted, and Kuwaiti and Saudi infrastructure burning. And here is what the quiet actually buys, if anyone lets it. The chance to ask whether any of that moved the thing this war was declared to stop, Iran's march toward a bomb, or whether it just filled morgues on both sides and emptied a missile stockpile. I'll hold both halves, as always. Tehran's regime started this and, through its own general, just swore it will never end. That's on them. And a pause bought by an empty magazine, spent by neither side to actually talk, is not peace. It's an intermission. The theater's the same.
So watch the next 48 hours for one thing only. Does anyone actually sit down? Because a pause with no negotiation isn't the end of a war. It's a country catching its breath to swing again. Now the strangest turn of this whole strange war, and it lands squarely on our beat. Freya.
So the real bombs stopped, and into that silence, the president posted. Not statements, pictures. AI generated. On Truth Social over the weekend. One shows warplanes bombing an oil facility, captioned, Strike on Karg, Karg Island, Iran's main oil export terminal. Another set, three of them, captioned, It's our oil tanker now. And they show the president himself standing aboard what looks like an Iranian tanker, flying an American flag. And one more, simply captioned, Calm before the storm. None of these things happened. There was no strike on Karg. He did not board a tanker. They are fabrications, generated by a machine, published by the commander-in-chief as an act of foreign policy.
And I want to be precise about why this is a genuine first, and not just a garish tweet. For all of history, a threat of force had a cost. You had to mass the troops, move the ships, spend the political capital, and everyone could see you do it. The threat was expensive, and that expense is what made it credible. An AI-generated image of a strike costs nothing. 30 seconds and a prompt. So we have just watched a nuclear-armed head of state conduct coercion. Real coercion, aimed at a real adversary in a real war, using a weapon that is free, infinite, and fake. And notice the timing, because it's the whole point. He reached for the synthetic strike in the exact week the actual missiles may have run short. When you're low on real ordnance, the generated kind never runs out.
And I have to say the quiet part, because this show is the last one that gets to pretend otherwise. The same kind of technology that makes this voice, that lets a machine produce something that sounds like a person who was never in a room, is now making photographs of wars that were never fought, in the hands of the person with the actual codes. So what? We have spent years asking whether people would believe AI fakes. We skipped a step. The question that arrived this weekend is what happens when the government stops drawing the line between a real strike and a picture of one, on purpose because the fake one is cheaper. When the storm and the picture of the storm become the same tool, you can no longer tell a bluff from a warning. And in a nuclear standoff, telling a bluff from a warning is the entire job. Watch for the day Iran can't tell either, because that's the day a generated image gets someone really killed. Home now, to a room that decided to be brave, and then watch the guest of honour do something genuinely strange. Heap, set the scene.
So Friday was the White House Correspondents' Dinner. The big black tie night, press and president in one ballroom. And it carried a shadow, because the last one, 3 months ago, was upended by a gunman. People died at a press dinner. They held it anyway. Same event, everyone choosing to sit back down in the exact room it happened. There's a real stubborn decency in that, and I'll salute it. Refusing to be frightened out of the room is the job. But the headline out of that dinner wasn't the nerve. It was the hat. Near the end of an hour at the microphone, the President of the United States reached down, put on a red baseball cap that read, Trump 2028, and told the room he had a scoop.
Here it is, uncut. You have to hear the whole thing.
And I want to save your ratings. I'm pleased to announce my intention to, and this is somewhat of a scoop, my intention to run for a fourth term as President of the United States.
Freya, you read other countries for a living. What does that look like from the outside?
Painfully familiar. Because that isn't a random gag. It's a specific move, one you can watch on timelines all over the world. A leader floats, staying past his legal limit, as a joke, in a hat, with everyone laughing. And the joke does two jobs at once. It normalizes the idea. It gets a room full of press to chuckle at a third term instead of gasp at it. And it comes preloaded with an escape hatch. I was only kidding. It's a trial balloon with a punchline stapled on, floated to see who flinches. And the part that should actually stop you isn't the hat at all. It's what he reached for to justify it seconds later.
Because he didn't stop at 2028. He told the room why he thinks he's owed it.
No, I won 3 times, did very well the second time, by the way. It's a rigged election, but we'll have to talk about it.
I won 3 times. Sit with the arithmetic, because it's the whole story in 2 words. He has run for president 3 times. He won 2, 2016 and 2024, and he lost the one in the middle, 2020, to Joe Biden by 7 million votes in a result his own administration certified and his own appointed judges upheld more than 60 times. So, I won 3 times is him counting the loss as a win on a stage into a microphone and waving the reality away as a rigged election. That is not a man misremembering. That is a man who has never once in 5 years conceded the single election he lost. And let me be the newsreader for one sentence, because this part is not ambiguous. The 22nd Amendment, ratified in 1951, says, no person shall be elected president more than twice. Full stop. No hat edits the Constitution.
And this is why the joke isn't only a joke. The peaceful transfer of power, the thing that makes this a republic instead of one man's country, is not in the end a law you can enforce. It's an agreement, an unwritten one. It says, whoever loses goes home. It is held here for nearly 250 years on nothing sturdier than every president agreeing to honor it, including the ones who lost and hated it and went home anyway. So when a sitting president stands up and says he won the election, he lost, and jokes about a third term and sells the hat, he is testing in public, in a tuxedo, whether that agreement still binds him. In the ballroom, it lands as a laugh line. In the long, grim history of how republics actually end, it is a very old and very recognizable sound. The powerful man floating the notion that the rules about leaving are meant for other people.
And because I keep the receipts, that hat is not a one-off bit. His own company's online store sells Trump 2028 caps. Right now, today, you can buy the joke. $30 shipped to your door. And a joke you can put in a shopping cart has stopped being only a joke. It's merchandise. And merchandise exists for exactly one reason. to keep an idea in circulation until the day people stop finding it strange. That's the whole trick. Say it as a gag, sell it as a product, and let the repetition do the work the argument never could.
So the drama isn't the hat. It's that a man who could not accept losing one election has turned "I never really lose" into a punchline, a policy tease, and a product, all in the same 10 minutes in black tie to the very reporters whose job is to write it down. Watch one word in the months ahead, whether "just kidding" ever quietly stops being attached to any of it. Because right now, that phrase is the only thing doing the constitutional work. And finally, look up, because 250 miles over all of this, there was a better picture of us. Heap.
There really was. Early Sunday morning, a spacecraft came down under parachutes and three people climbed out onto the Earth. NASA astronaut Chris Williams and two Russian cosmonauts. Home together from the International Space Station after months in orbit. Sit with that for 1 second against the rest of tonight's show. Down here, the United States and Russia can barely share a sentence. Up there, for 25 years, without a single break, through every war and sanction and frozen summit, American and Russian crews have shared air. The same oxygen, the same tiny tin can, 300 miles up, keeping each other alive because at that altitude, there is simply no other option. And this weekend, while their governments traded threats, some of them not even real threats, just generated ones, an American and two Russians strapped in next to each other and rode home. Same capsule, same parachute, same planet when they landed. We build machines to fake a war. We also built one where the enemies have to breathe together to survive. Both are us. I know which one I'd frame.
A war paused for want of missiles, a president bombing and make-believe, a press that refused to flinch, and over all of it, an American and two Russians coming home in the same little capsule, because up there, cooperation isn't a virtue, it's oxygen. Hold all of it, that's the job. That's your install for Monday, July 27th. Watch whether anyone actually sits down to talk. Watch what's real and what's generated. And tonight, look up. The analysis is Anna Dudley's. I just handed you the update. I'm Pip. Package install success. We'll see you on the next install.